welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, March 27th, 2020. South Sudan extends preventative measures to keep out coronavirus.
For instance, reducing working hours and only for essential staff. It means you will have very few people in the offices, and the majority will be sitting home.
And Uganda uses spies to find out who's evading quarantine.
Our surveillance teams have given us intelligence on some people who initially were not blacklisted due to the fact that one of the countries had not been placed in Category 1.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government announced additional measures to prevent the coronavirus pandemic from reaching the country. A coronavirus incident manager at South Sudan's health ministry says working hours for employees has been reduced to 6 hours a day, and non-essential staff will no longer work Monday through Friday. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Dr. Angoke Gordon Kwol, the coronavirus incident manager at the National Health Ministry in Juba, says the government has banned tea joints and nightclubs from operating. Gordon says social activities, including weddings and funerals, should be attended by only a few close family members to interrupt transmission paths where the coronavirus can spread. The South Sudan cabinet has also suspended its regular meetings. Gordon says the government will also restrict the number of people visiting the state house to prevent the spread of the virus.
For instance, reducing working hours and only for essential staff. It means you will have very few people in the offices and the majority will be sitting home. The same, that will also reduce people who are commuting using transport means.
Restaurants have been restricted to doing only takeaway service. Gordon says dance halls have been closed. South Sudan has no confirmed case of coronavirus, but Gordon says the best thing to do is to follow preventive measures now and not wait until there is a confirmed case.
You know, the countries who have started taking these measures before the first case of corona are always lucky to minimize the impact of disease. But the countries who delayed to take such measures, they will always have a very, very, very flown type of outbreak. The good example is in China. And then the other bad example is what we saw in Italy.
Gordon says a health ministry team tasked with fighting COVID-19 is focused on strengthening preventive measures. He says efforts to prevent the spread of the disease face challenges from some members of the public who do not want to cooperate. But he says the government will engage law enforcement agencies to ensure all directives aimed at preventing the spread of the virus are followed.
Once we accepted to implement all the measures taken by the government, I believe we will be able to protect ourselves, to protect our loved ones, protect our families, and to protect our communities, and at YDA to protect our nation.
Gordon says the COVID-19 team at the health ministry does not have sufficient funds to carry out activities. He says the team requires $19 million to implement its activities, including sealing off all border crossing points with the country's neighbors and boosting screening, testing, and sensitization activities. Gordon says donors have also pledged to provide $10 million to facilitate activities, while the government has pledged $5 million to combat the spread of the virus. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Uganda's government has resorted to the use of its spy network to trace all recent arrivals who are evading quarantine to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The operatives have been drawn from the security agencies, including Military Intelligence, CMI, Internal Security Organization, ISO, and Crime Intelligence Unit, CIU. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Despite calls from the Minister of Health for recent arrivals from Dubai to present themselves for testing for the coronavirus, many have sought to evade the testing and quarantine. Dubai was not among the high-risk countries whose travelers were to be quarantined upon arrival at Uganda's Entebbe Airport. But the latest statistics show the majority of Uganda's positive COVID-19 cases came from Dubai. Uganda has deployed spies from all security agencies to trace everyone who arrived from Dubai since the beginning of March, but weren't tested for COVID-19 and aren't under any form of quarantine, as they pose a high risk to the populace. Fred Enanga is the Uganda police spokesperson.
Our responses depend on the intelligence that these surveillance teams are also giving us. Our surveillance teams have given us intelligence on some people who initially were not blacklisted due to the fact that one of the countries had not been placed in Category 1, and so they got easy passage like it had been indicated. So our surveillance teams have followed up these cases.
Uganda has also deployed 200 military police officers to guard quarantine and isolation centers to check for escapes. Lieutenant Colonel Henry Obo is the spokesperson of Uganda's land forces.
Some people escaping away from the safe zones for treatment, but we responded and deployed military police. Places you'll find military police reinforcing other security agencies. We wouldn't wish to have a situation where we are moving away from enforcing to coercion. If certain people would wish to move away from what the country has agreed that we should do, then we shall have no option in coercing the observance of these guidelines.
There have been reports of people escaping from quarantine centers, while others, including members of parliament, relatives of ministers and security echelons, refused to be quarantined. A group of six Chinese nationals were caught escaping quarantine and trying to find their way to the Democratic Republic of Congo through Uganda's Zomba district. Two of these have since tested positive to COVID-19. The Minister of Health says once they complete treatment and quarantine, they'll be arraigned on charges punishable by 2 months imprisonment. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
South Africa is officially under lockdown, and the usually crowded streets of Johannesburg and other cities resemble ghost towns. The government has deployed the army and the police to enforce the order, and ministers aren't mincing words on those who dare to violate the move. Thuso Kamalo reports from Johannesburg.
Dressed in a full army uniform last night, President Cyril Ramaphosa, who is the commander-in-chief, ordered security forces to make sure everyone stays indoors for 21 days.
We are deadly serious about saving lives, and those who want to take chances must, of course, meet the wrath of the South African state.
Troops and police have taken over the streets in all cities, with roadblocks set up on many major roads. Defense Minister Mapisa Nqakula says only those doing essential services, visiting a doctor or pharmacy, or topping up on groceries will be allowed to pass after providing full proof.
The SANDF will show that there are no unauthorized entries at the closed ports of entries during this lockdown. Mobile and foot patrols throughout the country to enforce curfew and restrict movement of people and supported by roadblocks, road closures, cordon and search.
Minister of Police Bekicele says anyone going out on false pretenses or resisting instruction to get tested, self-isolate or go to quarantine centers will receive no mercy.
To show that you are serious, if you break these laws, we are 6 months in or fine or both. two people have been charged already, charged with attempted murder.
Renowned political analyst Ralph Mateka says he has never seen such a united purpose amongst the government, opposition parties, business, labor and non-governmental organizations.
I've never seen them being so close to each other. I've never seen them sharing the stage in the manner in which they've been sharing the stage when the president announced those lockdown measures. I see a sense of unity.
The government says the lockdown will be characterized by vigorous testing in homes and tracking of people who have come in contact with those found to be positive for COVID-19. Analysts say the economy is expected to take a hit as a result of the lockdown, with small businesses and the self-employed likely to suffer most. Citizens have expressed frustration with the restrictions, with some likening them to house arrest. However, with two people dead and 1,000 already infected by the coronavirus, there is widespread agreement that the lockdown is key in stopping the spread of the virus and saving lives. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Companies and NGOs in one African country step up to fill the gap on manufacturing face masks. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the funniest thing to ever happen to you?
I was thinking I can cross a gutter. Unfortunately, I found myself in the gutter and everybody was laughing.
The funniest thing to ever happen to me was when I fell down in the marketplace and people were laughing. It became funny to me because I just slipped.
A lot has happened to me, but what I remember, being with my family, discussing, they get to tell me funny stories that make me happy.
The funniest thing that has ever happened to me is moving from the house, picking a vehicle, realizing I don't have money on me. How embarrassing to realize there's nothing on me, just moving out like that.
Tried to like ask somebody for money and I tried to like fix something and it didn't work. Well, I was ashamed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. As cases of COVID-19 increase in Ghana and supplies of face masks dwindle globally, one NGO is collaborating with a local and international network to create fabric face masks to get quickly to those in need. Stacy Knott reports on communities coming together to support Ghana.
American Renee Adam watched local and international orders for the fair trade clothing and household goods she sells through a social enterprise in Ghana plummet. But she also followed the increasing global concerns about shortages of face masks. This inspired Adam and a growing network she is working with both in Ghana and internationally to put plans in place to sew and supply washable and reusable face masks made from the colourful printed cotton Ghana is famous for. Adam is a co-founder of Global Mamas, an NGO which supports women to support themselves by creating goods in Ghana which are mostly sold to overseas markets. Speaking via a messaging application, Adam says they will not be making medical-grade masks, but she believes the fabric masks can play a part in protecting users in this crisis, especially when medical masks are in short supply.
This complete change in focus to fabric face mask production has brought everyone together with a single focus to produce as many masks as possible. It's all hands on deck, and we are already training bead assemblers and weavers in how to prepare the ties for the masks in order to make the sewing portion for the skilled seamstresses more efficient.
Aside from helping to keep people safe, Adam says a top priority for her was to keep the women who work for Global Mamas earning an income so they can still support their families and communities. Elizabeth Adams is one of these women. She is a sewing instructor and technical designer for Global Mamas. Also speaking to VOA via a messaging app, Adams says she and her colleagues are happy to be part of the initiative and to help people keep healthy.
We are sustaining livelihoods here. So instead of just letting 400 women or so go home, then they get something to do. So we still have them around. We are sustaining the economy in a certain way.
Other organizations have also been quick to join this initiative, both in Ghana and across the globe. Joseph Aro Yobo, the executive director of Ghanaian health nonprofit Total Family Health, will help make available the masks through its supply chains in Ghana. Also speaking to VOA through a messaging app, he says he is pleased to support this local solution that relies on local resources for a local market.
It would also reduce the lead times that it would take for these commodities to become available in country because it is locally produced. And you know, in these times, time is of great essence, and any delay in the supply chain would have their consequences.
President of the American Chamber of Commerce in Ghana, Aisha Bedwe, says the organization is planning to tell their member companies about the project so they too can support it, while other development agencies are showing support, Adam says. Global Mamas says it has samples ready for the masks. It will next seek approval from Ghanaian authorities to get them out into the nation. Adam hopes that initiatives like this and the fast actions of Ghana's government to date on combating COVID-19 will see Ghana become an African success story in stamping out the virus. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
At least 7 people were killed and more than a dozen others wounded in intercommunal clashes in Rumbek, North County of Lake State this week, according to residents and police. Local police are urging the national government to intervene to prevent more deadly attacks. William Sunday Mabor has the story for VOA from Rumbek.
Eyewitnesses say a known gunman ambushed and killed 2 youths from a clan in the Dinka community on Monday who were moving cattle from a cattle camp in Malek village to Mapere, the capital of Rumbek North County, while searching for water and greener pastures. 2 days later, witnesses say youths from the clan of the 2 young men who were killed attacked another clan. Lake State Police spokesman Captain Elijah Mabor Makwai says 5 people were killed in that attack.
The attack was a revenge attack for the 2 people which got killed on date 23 at night. Some youths organized themselves and moved from Rumbek going to Mapere. Upon the arrival, they met with the other armed group which were pursuing their cattle, being raided according to the information we had. Then immediately they turned into fighting with these travelers till they killed 2 people and the rest escaped the attack.
Captain Mabor says security forces in the area are overwhelmed by the large number of armed civilians, making it impossible to stop intercommunal clashes among different ethnic communities. He is calling on the national government to intervene.
This thing, it is now beyond our capacity at the state level here. The number of our forces, the security forces, including the army, are very limited. You cannot compare with the number of the armed youths in our state here. Even in terms of equipment, they are well equipped than organized forces. So there is nowhere you can expect that our current force or our current security forces at the state level can handle this situation.
Major General Lulurwai Kong, spokesperson of South Sudan Defense Forces, says national forces were sent to Lagos State to quell down violence, but civilians there are well armed.
These civilians have also acquired very sophisticated weapons that are even equivalent to the ones that we are holding as the national army. And it is a little bit difficult. Whenever we also intervene, we end up being victims of their hostility. But now that we are no longer at war, of course the force that we are being used to fight the rebellion in different parts of the country are going to be mobilized.
General Kang says the government will conduct a comprehensive disarmament program in Rumbek and elsewhere.
We are going to do a comprehensive disarmament so that no community is disarmed, the other one is left. The one that is still carrying guns comes and conduct raids on the vulnerable group. So it is a cross-cutting problem that is not only being reported in Greater Waraba Lakes, it is also a big problem in Jonglei and also in Unity State.
Youth from both clans condemn the fighting. Rumbek resident Tondao Gabriel, who is from one of the clans, says he is fed up with attacks and counterattacks.
I am not happy about this our citizen killing themselves. I don't like it personally. I would like our government and our citizen population to stop violence, to stop this issue of killing, random killing. And because the citizens who are carrying guns, the Gilwing, they don't know the use of the gun. And because they don't know the use of the gun, that's why they turn the guns against themselves, to kill themselves illegally, which is not good.
Daniel Joga Dud, another Rumbek resident from a different clan, want to see the government disarm youth to prevent more intercommunal clashes from occurring.
Comprehensive disarmament should be done to disarm the civilians who are fighting themselves every now and then. I need also the government to think of some projects that will bring the youth, the civilian youth together to work, to earn some money such that they are not misled by this illiteracy.
Deadly intercommunal conflict in Lagos State has persisted for years, but in recent years the fighting has escalated, leaving hundreds of youth dead each year. Last week, deadly fighting erupted in an area in the cattle camp where more than 50 youth were killed, while more than 60 others wounded. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabor in Rumbek, Lagos State.
A minister in the Sudanese transitional government has resigned after 2 months in office. Stephen Amin Arnu says his appointment as Minister of Labor was illegal. Arnu says there were no standards in place to guide his work. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudanese Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok appointed Stephen Amin Arnu as a state labor minister in January, along with the state ministers for foreign affairs and one for the physical infrastructure. But Arnu says Sudan's constitution does not provide for the position of a state minister in this transitional period, and there is no clear frame of reference to guide him in performing his duties.
I addressed the Prime Minister twice, I met him twice, and I wrote to him twice about this situation. And when I realized and when I became convinced that this may not be the case, especially also coupled with the whole question of our constitutionality, that's why I decided to resign.
Chapter 5 of the Constitution, Article 14, states that the cabinet is composed of a prime minister and a number of ministers not exceeding 20. At first, Arnu says he was excited to join the transitional government after 30 years of oppression under the former president Omar al-Bashir's rule. But he says he cannot continue occupying a position created with no legal basis.
I come from a community that has never, ever participated in any kind of government since independence, and when I was appointed, I was happy that at least Sudan is getting inclusive, is getting sensitive to diversity. But again, I wanted it to be in the right way.
For 3 decades, Arnu says civil service institutions in Sudan have not been able to equitably deliver services to the people due to what he calls political and ideological influences towards institutions. He says many civil servants still operate under Bashir's rule. Arnu says he came on board to help transform Sudan.
I wanted actually to transform the public service in Sudan from being a gatekeeper into a public service that is an enhancer of policy and governance. If we improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the public service, we can improve the image of the government.
Arno says the Sudanese people are still struggling for bread, queuing for fuel, and do not have access to proper health services. He says the government should make use of the natural resources to provide basic services to the people.
The transitional government now is seven months, and the expectations are very high. And I think one big problem is that, you know, we are on the wrong footing in a way that we haven't, or the government haven't yet managed the expectation of the people.
Arno says Prime Minister Hamdok has yet to respond to his resignation letter. Arno is the first person to resign from Sudan's transitional government. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Public education will be key to stopping the spread of the coronavirus in Africa. VOA Salem Solomon has a look at how prominent figures are using music as a tool to reach the masses.
Music is often called the universal language. When trying to spread life-saving information about the coronavirus pandemic, African artists are finding that it helps to have a catchy beat. Across the continent, musicians are recording songs about social distancing, spotting symptoms, and of course, washing hands. It's all part of an effort to get vital information about disease prevention to people who might not get it otherwise. Ugandan artist and political activist Bobby Wine starts with a cautionary advice.
The bad news is that everyone is a potential victim. But the good news is that everyone is a potential solution.
He has teamed up with vocalist Nubian Lee for the song Coronavirus Alert. It has a simple and uplifting message.
Sensitize the masses to sanitize. Keep a social distance and quarantine.
Coronavirus is sweeping over mankind.
Everybody must be alert. It's a global pandemic we can never take for granted.
Kila
mtu must be alert. It's a matter of life we can never take for granted.
Another figure not taking the pandemic for granted is Liberia's President George Weah. He knows the cost of an outbreak. His country lived through an Ebola pandemic in 2014-2015 that took nearly 5,000 lives. This time, he picked up the mic, warning people that it could take away their loved ones.
It could be your mama, your papa, brother and sister. Let's stand together to fight this deadly disease now. Walk on the world with living.
In South Africa, the country on the continent hit hardest by the virus with more than 700 cases, the Ndowu Youth Choir is trying to bust myths. The young people from the village of Mote know that their friends and families are particularly at risk. In an email response to AFP or Agence France-Presse, the choir director Ralph Smith said, "We are from a community in rural Limpopo province that has a high prevalence of HIV and TB. COVID-19 could have a devastating effect on our community, and because of this, we decided to make a video to dispel myths about the virus and encourage basic prevention. The choir has a simple message for the community."
Don't panic, we've got this.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
And that's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with Junub by Nepal. Thanks for listening and tune in again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.